Chapter 4, The Sentence of Death, The Ruin of the Old World, and the Preservation of a Remnant. In the previous chapter, I have treated of the introduction of sin into the world, its immediate effects upon the transgressors, and some of its remoter consequences upon their posterity. We left Adam and his companion hid among the trees of the garden, greatly alarmed at the voice of God, and overwhelmed with shame at the condition to which they had reduced themselves. But though hid, as they supposed, they soon found the truth of the saying that is written, that there is not any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. When the Lord God called to Adam, he said, in answer to the question, "Where art thou?" "I was afraid, because I was naked, and I hid myself." This was the truth as far as it went, but it was not the whole truth. Fear, shame, and concealment are plainly avowed. But why was he ashamed? He was not ingenuous enough to confess. The Lord God, however, knowing from the mental constitution he had bestowed upon him that man could not be ashamed unless his conscience was defiled by transgression of his law, in fact or in supposition, directed his next enquiry so as at once to elicit a confession of the whole truth. "Who told thee," said he, "that thou wast naked? Did I tell thee, or did any of the Elohim? Or hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat? Thou hast no cause to be afraid of me, or ashamed of thine appearance, as I have formed thee, unless thou hast sinned against me by transgressing my law. Thou hast heard my voice, and stood upright and naked in my presence before, and wert not ashamed. What hast thou done? Why coverest thou thy transgression by hiding thine iniquity in thy bosom?" But Adam, still unwilling to be blamed according to his demerits, in confessing, reflected upon the Lord God, and turned evidence against Eve. "The woman," said he, "whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat." As much as to say, if thou hadst not put her in my way, and I had been left to myself, I should not have done it. It is she who is chiefly to blame, for she not only ate herself, but tempted me. The offence being traced to Eve, the Lord Elohim said to her, "What is this that thou hast done?" But her ingenuousness was no more conspicuous than Adam's. She confessed that she had eaten, but excused herself on the ground of a deception having been practised upon her by the serpent. "The serpent beguiled me," said she, "and I did eat." There is no evidence that the serpent either touched the tree or ate of its fruit. Indeed, if he had, he would have committed no offence, for the law was not given to him, but to Adam and Eve only, and where there is no law, there is no transgression. Besides, Paul says Eve was the first in the transgression. The Lord God, therefore, did not interrogate the serpent as he had the others. He had, by his clumsy interpretation of what he had seen and heard, corrupted Eve's mind from the simplicity of faith and obedience to the divine law, but he was incapable of showing upon what moral grounds he had called in question its literality. He thought they would not surely die, because he thought they could as well eat of the tree of life as of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. He thought nothing of the immorality of the Lord God solemnly declaring to do a thing and not performing it. Cognizance of the morality of thoughts and actions was beyond the sphere of his mentality. With all his superior shrewdness, he was neither responsible nor able to give an account. All the evidence in the case being elicited, the Lord God proceeded to pass sentence upon the accused in the order of their conviction. Being incriminated by Eve, and having in effect accused God of lying, the Lord God began with him, and said, "Because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle, and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. He shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." This sentence was both literal and allegorical, like the rest of the things exhibited in the Mosaic account, being representations of the knowledge and the truth. For the information of the unlearned reader, I remark that to allegorize is to speak in such a way that something else is intended than is contained in the words literally construed. The historical allegory has a double sense, namely the literal and the figurative, and the latter is as real as the former is essential to its existence. Thus the literal serpent was allegorical of sin in the flesh, which is therefore figuratively styled the serpent, and so on, as before explained. The literal formation of Eve out of Adam's side was allegorical of the formation of the church out of him of whom Adam was the figure. Therefore the church is the figurative Eve and its temptation, illustrated by that of the literal one. The examples of this are almost infinite. That of Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar, as allegorized by Paul in the text below, is a beautiful illustration of the relation between the literal and the figurative as they are employed in the scriptures of truth. The discernment of the due limit between them is acquired not by rules, but by much and diligent study of the word. The literal is the exact construction of the sentence as it reads, and is found in strict accordance with their natural habits and mutual antipathy between serpents and mankind. They go upon their belly and lick the dust, and by the deadly quality of their venom or sting, they are esteemed more hateful than any other creatures. In walking with a naked foot, one would be bitten in the heel, whose retaliation would be instinctively to bruise the serpent's head. This is all perfectly natural. But what does it suggest? Much that might be said upon the allegorical meaning of this passage is already before the reader. I shall add, therefore, by way of summary, the following particulars. 1. The serpent, as the author of sin, is allegorical of sin in the flesh, which is therefore called the wicked one, and symbolized in its personal and political agency by the serpent. 2. The putting of enmity between the serpent and the woman is allegorical of the establishment of enmity between sin, incorporate in the institutions of the world, or the serpent, and the obedience of faith embodied in the congregation of the Lord, which is the woman. 3. The seed of the serpent is allegorical of those over whom sin reigns, as evinced in their obeying it in the lusts thereof. They are styled the servants of sin, or the tares. 4. The seed of the woman is allegorical of the children of the kingdom, or the servants of righteousness. They are also termed the good seed, who hear and understand the word of the kingdom sown in their hearts as incorruptible seed. 5. The seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman are phrases to be taken in the singular and plural numbers. Plurally, in the sense of the fourth particular, and singularly, of two separate hostile personages. 6. The serpent bruiser of the heel is the sixth or imperial head of the dragon, to be crushed at the period of its binding in the person of the last of the autocrats. 7. The head bruiser of the dragon, the old serpent, surnamed the devil and Satan, is emphatically the seed of the woman, but not of the man. The allegorical reading of the text founded upon these particulars is as follows. I will put the enmity of that mode of thinking thou hast elicited in Eve and her husband against my law between the powers that shall be hereafter in consequence of what thou hast done, and the faithful and unblemished corporation I shall constitute. I will put this enmity of the spirit against the flesh, and of the flesh against the spirit, between all who obey the lusts of the flesh which thou hast excited, and those of my institution who shall serve me. Their chief shall bear away the world's sin which thou hast originated, and shall destroy all the works that have grown out of it, and the sin power shall wound him to death. But he shall recover it, and accomplish the work I now preordain him to do.